Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the first AAC meeting of September 2022. Welcome back from the summer break. I hope everyone had a good summer. I'm going to just go over a few helpful tips before we begin with our usual session. Everyone who is joining through phone calls, you can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everyone on the video call, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. If you go under reactions, you can click on the raise hand icon, and that will raise and or lower your virtual hands. I would request everyone to keep yourself on mute unless speaking. This helps us eliminate any external noise. So thank you in advance for that. As you may recall, we always have ASL interpreters with us on our meetings. Therefore, I would request everyone to please state your name before speaking and try not to speak too fast. It helps them doing their job well. If you state your name, it also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is. For any presenters, for your visual presentation, I would please request for you to describe your slides in detail for the convenience of our members and customers who are blind or have low vision. At this point, Chair Posner, I would go ahead and read the agenda out loud for everyone, and I can also share my screen.
Yes, please, thank you.
Sure. Agenda for today's Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting is as follows. We are going through the call to order and approval of agenda. Afterwards, Paul Smedberg, WMATA board chairman, will be speaking. At 6:05, we have Teresa Impastado to discuss general metro safety overview. At 6:25, we would have Neil Nott to present Silver Line Phase 2. At 6:40, we would resume our normal session, going through the roll call of AAC committee members, approval of prior meeting minutes, as well as the board report. At 6:45, we will take any public comments and the bus and rail subcommittee meeting report would be at 7, followed by the Metro Access subcommittee report at 7:15, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 7:30 p.m. I would stop sharing my screen at this point. Chair Posner, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward at this time. You have the floor.
Yes, thank you. Since Mr. Smedberg's a little bit late and Teresa is here. And
this is Rico Dancy. I have something I'd like to add.
Yes, go ahead.
Chair Posner, Mr. Smedberg is joined.
Oh, fantastic. Welcome.
We're good to go, sir.
Okay.
What's happening? It's so quiet.
Oh, we're about to have our first speaker. Mr. Smedberg has arrived. As soon as Anu lets him in.
Mr. Smedberg is in the meeting.
Okay, terrific. Oh, John Pasek also. Welcome, John. I don't see him on my screen.
I can see you, Phil.
Oh, well, that's good.
Mr. Smedberg, go ahead, please. The floor is yours.
Okay. Is it okay? Phil, can you see me, hear me?
Fantastic.
Yes.
You have survived all your travels to all of the locations and the opening of all the stations. It's been a busy weekend. So please, it's your floor.
Okay. Well, welcome. And thank you, Philip, and the committee for having me. So I guess I have to say, in case someone doesn't know, by chance, we have a new general manager now, Randy Clark, who's been with us for, 5.5, 6 weeks now, I guess, going on week six, or is week six. So a lot happening, that he's had a deal with right out of the box, which is good. I mean, I think, having someone, from the outside coming in with that critical eye is helpful to the group. I do want to mention, though, that, during the transition, Andy Off and Teresa Imposato and others were, very, very helpful and, and did a really great job during that period of time and really help, set the stage, for Andy or for Randy's arrival. So want to thank them and, recognize their efforts. But Randy obviously has hit the ground running. We've got a strategic planning process underway or will be underway later this week, where I think it's fair to say, everything will be on the table, particularly as we enter the budget season. And I'm sure we'll be hearing from this committee as we always do on any number of topics, which is great. And I can just say personally, I've always appreciated how thoughtful you all have been, in that regard. It's been really, really helpful and how collaborative you are with the staff that you interact with, because it really does, have an impact. We've also have bus, transformation coming up, which is going to be in the next phase of that, the redesign project, which is going to be a really, pretty big deal. And a lot that I assume you're going to want to, make your voice heard on, as that moves forward. And I'm sure that will, or when I say that will, WMATA will engage with you, in a pretty significant way on that, I'm sure. Hopefully, we had another announcement. We got a few more 7,000s back, thanks to Teresa and her team and others. So hopefully, we can get even more back by the, by the fall time frame, which is really needed because we need to really, knock down those headways that we have currently, in a lot of the stations. Philip, I don't know if you, I'm sure the committee is aware, they get a lot of the communiques coming from WMATA, but the Yellow Line shutdown, which is going to be, fairly significant. There's been a lot of coordination between WMATA and Alexandria Arlington and Fairfax to make it as painless as possible, but it is, it's going to be for a while now for a project that, definitely needs to be done. So, we know it's inconvenient. We know, it's going to cause some pain. And I know we're worried about it because it's at a time when people are starting to go back to the office, whether it be 2 days a week, 3 days a week. So it really comes at a bad time, honestly. But it's something that is needed and to make the system safer and more reliable into the future. So, we just got to accept it and work through it. We have a good contractor and, a good team internally in place. So hopefully we can get through it, on time, which would be really great if we can do that. I think those are the real highlights, but I think, again, Philip, I think the thing, to really stress, with you and your committee, I think a lot of things will be on the table. I mean, there's going to be some, tough choices. We got to learn how people are commuting or not commuting and how people are going to be using the system differently and how they are already using it differently, you know, at nights and special events and things like that. Reverse commuting, I think we're going to see more reverse commuting than we ever have been. You know, a lot of younger people, younger couples are living in the core and working out in the suburbs, you know, particularly, you know, in Virginia. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're going to, there's going to be a lot that we're going to have to, you know, examine. And, you know, it may take a while for us to figure out what the new service levels and how people are or are not using the system. And, you know, and that's not just rail, that's bus. You know, as we learned that during the pandemic, you know, bus ridership has, you know, been higher than rail, you know, right now. So having the redesign project and the bus transformation work being done now at this time is also really important. So, you know, a lot of momentum, a lot of movement into, you know, a positive, you know, future. And, you know, I guess the last one big thing is, you know, Silver Line, hoping, you know, working toward the opening of the Silver Line, which I think is going to be not only critical for the Commonwealth, but more importantly for the system in general, because that is an area where we could truly see some growth in terms of ridership and numbers and things like that. So, you know, I think, you know, that's going to be really important that we, you know, get that line open as soon as we can. You know, we're in sort of a preparation phase now in the yard. And again, I know Teresa and Andy and Lynn and others are working really closely with the Safety Commission because they will have a say in this and when we can and can't open or start, you know, service. The board will have the ultimate decision, but, you know, they're a key factor here for us here. So, but, you know, things as best we know now are going okay in that area. So, which is really good. So, and it's going to be a big deal for the airport. You know, people who, you know, are used to going into major cities. You know, right now we're probably the only major city in the world that I'm aware of that doesn't have, you know, the rail line, you know, getting to and from its major airport. So it's a little odd, particularly for international folks when they come and, you know, they know they can't get on a transit system to to get to DC or wherever it is they're going. It's sort of odd for them. So, so that'll be really exciting. So hopefully in the next 4 months, we're going to have a really, really good, a lot of good news stories. For once, we deserve it, right?
Yes, there was a good article today from Jordan Pascal that the Safety Commission is letting you go a few days between inspections on the 7,000. So they will be coming in a little bit faster in larger numbers, if that's a true article. But Jordan is pretty accurate, most of us.
Yeah. Well, I think Teresa, isn't she on your agenda tonight? Isn't she?
Yes, she is. Yeah. And I actually was going to ask you and her the same thing. You know, we love to participate in these safety exercises. But 4 years ago, they required us to sign a waiver to participate so that if any of our equipment is broken or any injuries take place or whatever, WMATA is not liable. And we have stopped participating. When I say we, I mean the disability community, because there have been some accidents in the past where wheelchairs have been damaged or people have had sprained ankles or cuts or what have you, which are minor. They're not multi-$1,000 items, but it would be helpful if WMATA would help with that. And I know Teresa would have noticed this weekend's exercise, there weren't any disabled people there. We have met with the EMT people at our meetings and gone over a lot of work, and we have given them thoughts of how to handle people with mobility devices, people who are blind, people who are deaf, people who are mute, et cetera, et cetera. And we would love to have the board reconsider the waiver. And we pointed out that WMATA has sovereign immunity. So no one is going to sue WMATA for millions of dollars if there's damage. But for us to have to pay a physician for a sprained ankle or a cut or a repair to a wheelchair or whatever, it is a financial burden. And I know tomorrow when our group is going out to inspect the Silver Line expansion, we have been asked to sign the waiver. And so there will be some people that do go out, but it's probably less than there would be without the waiver being required. So it would be nice if you could all consider that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's more an administrative question, Philip. I'm not sure that I don't know. I personally can't recall if the board took a formal action on that. It probably came from, you know, the executives at WMATA, but I can follow up with, you know, the appropriate
parties. Paul,
to see. Yeah,
Patty. Paul Wiedefeld did it. Paul Wiedefeld
put it in. Paul did it, yeah. Yeah, I assume that would be an administrative kind of function. Yeah.
But he did go to the board, so I thought, you know,
We'd
talk to Randy on Monday and ask him, but since you and Teresa were both here, you know, I thought we'd, you know, bring it up with you.
Yeah, and I don't know if, Philip, if COVID had anything to do with it either.
No, it was before
COVID. I mean, no, having the public, you know, participate the way it did and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Yeah. But that was it. And I know that Randy has been tweeting that fares are on his screen, and I know he's going to speak to the board about fares. And I've been tweeting back to him as he tweets about it, and reminded him of the flat fares, as you have heard from us over and over again. And in fact, a flat fare would increase fare box recovery for Metro Access, because right now, 2/3 of the Metro Access riders are paying minimum. And about 1/3 are paying maximum. So if you pick a flat fare in between zero and $650, there will be an increase in fare box recovery. And of course, you know, what we'd request is a flat fare that's sustainable, less than $650, and more than zero, which is sustainable. So I'm sure, again, in many of his recent tweets, he said he's going to bring that to the board for discussion. And I know you've heard from us all the time.
Yeah.
But I'll just reinforce it again that, again, if you look at fare box recovery, and what we're interested in really is knowing what the fare is. Denise isn't here today yet, but an example is when she went to the board meeting last month in August.
Yeah.
Our fare to get there was $6.50. The fare to come home was $3.20. And we get that report from somebody almost every month that they've made the same trip out and back on the same day, and the fares were very different. And then, of course, there's the regular that they make the same trip on different days, and the fares are different. And they just can't plan financially. And so they really just want to have something that's understandable and flat. And as we pointed out, the fare calculator is only updated with the data once a month. And so with all the construction going on, and we've had accidents at some level and people on the tracks, et cetera, the actual fare is based upon the universe of perfect predictability as opposed to real world evidence, as we say in the medical field. And once again, we wouldn't need real evidence. We wouldn't have customers unhappy. We wouldn't have staff explaining why the fares were incorrect. and the farebox recovered would be better if there was something flat in between. And I'm done bombing. but if you'd like to take some questions, I think we should let some other committee members, if they choose to raise their hand. So if it's okay.
Dr. Posner, this is Anu. Patrick just raised his hand, followed by Phil Weintraub. Patrick, go ahead.
You know, I don't know how it is that as soon as you raise your hand, your other phone starts ringing. I think there's a law about that. Congratulations, sir, on being reelected as board chair. I'm very pleased about that. I think that's excellent for WMATA. And I think I can speak for a large part of AEC to say that we appreciate working with you. And you've been very, very good to work with, and you've been excellent on disability issues. A couple of questions. One being, I think it was last year we talked about making sure that we had enough data so that we could our correct data so that we could figure out the trains and the buses and what the ratio would be and how often they would run. And I know that that was kind of a work in progress. I think that was maybe before a lot of the 7,000s were taken out of service. I'm wondering, do you feel confident that we have enough of the people bringing the data in so that we can make that kind of change as far as bus and rail service over the next, let's say, 6 months? And then the second part of the question deals with the money that's coming in from the transportation bill, and then other information that we have received with other funding coming in. Any idea what are the projects that WMATA is planning to use to help spend that money?
Yeah, well, I mean, this year, you know, our money is going to run out, you know, soon from the federal government that we received. But it has, you know, allowed us to, you know, keep certain things going, certain people, you know, employed, and then has allowed for, you know, money to be, you know, used for, you know, those important state of good repair and capital projects. But it is definitely, you know, maybe not this year as much, this, you know, next go around, but certainly in 25 and 26, fiscal year 25 and 26, you know, there definitely could be some challenges because that, you know, because that money's, you know, going to be gone. So, you know, like we've said earlier, so everything will definitely be on the table, so to speak. You know, Patrick, instead of, in terms of data, you know, things are definitely picking up. I mean, you go on certain lines now, you're on trains certain times of the day. It looks like normal, you know, commuting patterns, but then there are other days where, you know, it's not a normal, you know, day. You know, I think Fridays are going to be really, you know, dead, so to speak, in terms of, you know, the commuter. I think that, we just don't know enough yet about how, again, people are going to use the system, how many days a week they're going to be, you know, commuting, not commuting, you know, how are people going to use it on the weekends? You know, we're experimenting with, you know, $2 flat fares on the weekends and after what, 9:30 at night, I think it is, during certain parts of the week. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what that does in terms of ridership. Because we do have to get people back. But I think in general, we'll probably have enough information to make informed decisions. We can always use more, obviously. and I think, you know, the capital side of the budget is in pretty good shape. You know, the projects, you know, the state of good repair work over the last 6-7 years within the agency, the dedicated funding that the three states brought forward has really, really helped, you know, make the system even safer. So yeah, there's budgetarily or financially, fiscally, however you want to frame it, you know, it's going to be a challenge. And I think, you know, we're all going to have a, you know, some hard conversations down the road in terms of choices, you know, because there's going to be, a lot to consider. Did that answer your question, Patrick, or?
Yes, no, that was kind of, I was interested really in the data piece, and I appreciate that. It's going to be challenging because we don't know what the patterns will be like.
Yeah.
But and also I know the money will be coming in for projects, and I'm sure you've seen all the grants and everything coming out. And so it's good that we'll be able to take advantage of that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And we are aggressively pursuing any kind of grant funding, you know, special initiative funding, things like that, for sure. Absolutely.
Good. That's great to hear. Good. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Super. Thank you. We'll go to Phil and then Denise and then Steve, and we're going to put a new one on the clock for you. So Phil, 3 minutes.
Hi, I have two questions. First of all, when you're talking about these exercises that you're involving people with disabilities, also you need to think about when you're involving, especially people with intellectual disabilities who are, can be like a lot of times can be afraid of like loud noises. You need to also let them know so they don't go freaking out and something loud goes on. And then another thing I also was thinking is how we're going to be able to talk to the Metro Police to try and stop these attacks and assaults within the Metro before it happens. Because like, for example, what scared me is that knife assault on Metro Center a couple of weeks ago happened right when I was getting on the subway to go home. And I just worried, like, luckily I wasn't the one that was stabbed, but I understand the person who did it went to jail the next day, but is there a way they can catch those people before they actually do it?
Yeah, well, I know Randy has been.
I want to ensure the system is safe.
Yeah, and so do we. I mean, this obviously concerns us a great deal. You know, unfortunately, a lot of people use Metro as a way to, you know, escape or get out of the region. You know, if they do something terrible like that. But I know Randy, Mr. Clark, the new GM, and the police chief have been talking a lot, and you know, there's a lot of coordination, particularly with the police department and the District of Columbia, to really focus in on this area. I think you're going to be seeing, you know, Metro Police more visible on the platforms and in the cars if you haven't already. So they're very mindful of it. You know, we've increased our surveillance, capabilities, if you will, you know, in terms of cameras and things. And that has been really, really helpful in, you know, solving a lot of these crimes or helping police and other law enforcement officials, helping them, you know, track down suspects or, you know, prevent things from happening in the first place. So, it is definitely top of mind. And I know it's definitely top of the new GM's mind as well. Because, you know, unless people perceive the system as being safe, you know, they're not gonna come back. So it's really incumbent on us to really make sure that people have a sense of, you know, safety when they're riding the system or on a bus or whatever it is. Yeah.
Thank you. They have been great, but there's too much happening. But
unfortunately, the crime in the district has gotten out of control. Yeah.
Well, it's national. It's national. There are problems in New York and Pennsylvania and Boston. Yep. And it's the summer. It's hot. Mm-hmm. And people are agitated. So let Denise Rush go ahead. You know Denise.
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Yes, this is Ms. Rush. Thank you for talking to us this evening. My main concern, we cannot expect the system, we would like for the system to be safe, but as it's going now, nowhere in your parking lot, at the grocery store, at the gas station, anywhere, is anyone safe? And this area is going to have to figure out how to make it safe. But you have the AAC who wants to advise you. We used to do the safety exercises, and they started this waiver that Phil was talking about. It is important that people who have and know what to do or know what to suggest with these safety exercises participate. And to expect us to sign a waiver saying it's okay, anything happened to us, you're not responsible, is ludicrous. It's not right. And we have been talking about this too long and too many years to get the waiver changed, just the wording or something. But I don't believe that anybody from the AAC is participating tomorrow, are there?
You know, Denise, I'm sorry. I don't know. You know, I really don't know any of the details of, you know, the exercises other than, you know, they're taking place and then we get a general follow-up. But, you know, Ms. Empasado is on your agenda a little later this evening. And she might be able to provide, you know, more detail on that than I would.
And one more thing is that when we do advise, we advised about the chains on the rail cars.
Cars, yeah.
Yeah, we've advised about several things. And you hear us, you receive it, but you make decisions to do other things. Then you have to go back and fix it. Well, why do we advise? We experience it. We know. And we advise. And then they make other decisions. And then they got to go back and redo. That's costing money. Our time and costing WMATA money. I'm just not understanding. I've been participating in the meeting since 2000. And I don't understand over and over. We advise, we tell you about the bus stops, the signage, the elevators. We advise as best we can because that's our expertise.
Yep.
But.
Well, look, Denise, I can't speak for the past and why certain, you know, administrative decisions were not made, but I can tell you moving forward, I think with the new GM and with people like, you know, Teresa and Andy and others who are there now, I think it's going to be a new day. And I think, you know, Randy sees the advisory committees very differently than maybe prior leadership did. And I think you'll probably see, you know, quite a bit of change.
Thank you.
I hope you do. And thank you for coming. Thank you.
Yeah. Can I just say one thing real quick, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
Chris, if you wait for Steve and Tino, because you will have comments about their comments also, so why don't you save yours?
Okay, I'll do that, yes.
If you would. Okay, Steve, 3 minutes, you're on the clock, and then Tino.
Okay, sure, I will.
Hey, Chris.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, good.
Good seeing you.
Thank you. good to see you too today. I'm gonna move the discussion to a different perspective, and I'm gonna move it to buses, because the last couple of years, a lot of people have learned about buses and actually have become more accustomed to using buses, even for the kinds of distances where we used to use rail service.
Right.
For safety reasons, for distance reasons, and for many other reasons. Young people, and the young people, as we know, are staying in the city as opposed to leaving after after they finish school and graduate, are becoming part of the important fabric of the city.
Yeah.
They definitely prefer buses. And if you look at the choices they make when they travel, they prefer above ground with an interaction than below ground, unless there's a distance issue. Some cities use these little dash buses. You've seen them, they're express buses.
Yeah.
I think the LA configuration is probably the best because it's a medium-sized thing. I don't know what budget looks like, but I think these may be very cost effective, especially since there are a good number of systems in the country right now that have an excess, and they might be glad to have them taken off their hands, including the depreciation. These kinds of buses could be used as express buses in the city, running without a timetable, in other words, just moving people quickly, kind of a shared Uber, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
It might increase ridership by getting people more quickly around, be cost effective as far as fuel, and take away some of the, bring back some of the users that have gravitated to more express ways to get around, such as Uber. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And again, Steve, there's going to be a lot that's on the table, and I think all kinds of ideas are going to be thrown out there. So,
sure. Thanks.
Good. Yeah.
That's super. Tino, 3 minutes, and then we'll go to Chris Blake.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. You mentioned transit going from an airport to the city that it serves. If you have time, it's possible to take the Metro bus from Dulles.
Right. No, I know. I mean, I understand that, but with the rail.
Yes. The other thing I mentioned, you said that the capital budget looks good. Well, that's great. One of the capital expenditures is, keeping up with the filtration systems. We've experimented with the UVC filtration systems on the Metro rail. But on the Metro bus, let me mention that there have been these UVC filtration systems on the Dallas buses and Houston buses for many years. And then Cap Metro, Randy Clark's own system, installed them. And I think they finished installing them on all their buses, maybe just before he left Austin. But why are we not trying to install them on our Metro buses here? For example, the buses are less safe in terms of aerosol viruses than the trains. Why don't we do as Cap Metro did and as Houston and Dallas did, installing these UVC filtration system on our bus?
Yeah, again, I mean, I we don't get into those detailed specifics, generally speaking, as you know, the board, but we'll certainly pass that on and we can get some follow-up for you for sure. I know John is taking notes and follow-up items, so we can definitely find out, and maybe Teresa, who's on again on your agenda a little later, and Chris may have some more information, but I couldn't give you an answer tonight.
Okay, well, thank you. I've been talking about the pandemic begun, so.
Yeah, I know we have enhanced, cleaning and everything that's been going on for, a while now, and I assume will become part of regular protocol, but I can't speak specifically to the bus issue, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Super, thank you, Chris Blake. You can't ask all the questions before Paul Simmelthorpe comes on.
No problem. This is a real quick one. And you all heard me mention this, but Ms. Rush was correct. And I won't dare say that every single point of advice have the agency taken and ran with. So on that point, we do agree. Now, she did mention the between car barriers. That is a prime example of us listening to the customers and installing a type of barrier that was really advised by the committee. But I really raised the point because the committee have heard me say to them about the opportunities this board and your leadership have provided. And I would just say, for one thing, we did listen to the community, in particular, Ms. Rush, in terms of the Metro Access Service Area. We just did an analysis a couple of weeks ago. If we baselined our Metro Access Service Area to the exact points of the ADA, it would be approximately 980 square miles. Today, the Metro Access Service Area is over 1,500 square miles, way above and beyond the ADA baseline. And I'm just saying that because I've said this to you all before when the chairman hasn't been here, but yes, we listened to you. It was your idea, and we found a way to make it work, but it was Chairman Smedberg and the board that allowed that to take place. So yes, we don't do every single thing. We do listen, but that is a major, major accomplishment for the service area. I could be wrong, but there is hardly any major paratransit service in this country whose ratio to actual service area to the baseline is as great as WMATA. And the chairman deserves credit for allowing this to happen. And you all deserve credit for suggesting we look at that service area. But I just want you to know, we do listen, and where we can make it work, we go to the board and ask them to allow some things to occur. So I did not want this opportunity to go without the chairman hearing me say what I've said.
No. And thank you for that, Chris. And I knew there were things that have come forward that were clearly recommendations from the committee. But also too, Chris, don't they advise, I know it's maybe not your specific area, but or maybe Phil could answer this, but the redesign of, you know, the 7000 series cars and all kinds of things that
I threw these were meetings,
yes, very involved in. Yeah. Yes. Probably even more so than some internal staff members.
Probably so. Look at, I see the chief safety officer.
Yes, thank you. One of the reasons is that you always compliment us on working with staff. I learned a long time ago, when we suggest something, it has a cost and it has an efficiency. And typically the next question will be to ask the people that actually do the work, which is the staff. And so we always try to meet with staff first and then ask for what we think would make life better. And they would tell us, well, we can do that if we can afford it, or we can't do it even if we could afford it. And then we come to the board. So it's a team. It's always a team.
Yeah, and Phil, you've heard me say it a lot, and it's so true. I mean, I know the board and I know staff really appreciates how this committee collaborates with staff. I mean, it just does. And, you know, as Chris highlighted, and other, you know, it makes a big difference.
Yes, and we've been very lucky. The staff.
The people that staff.
The staff on sound and also have family members that have disabilities. So they are one of us. Ms. Proctor on the board is one of us. So we do that. And Paul Semelford has disappeared, but he had his hand up. Well, are you still there, Paul?
Mila is definitely there.
I am. Like I said, Mrs. Paul Semelford, who's also the Metro Access chairperson, I do want to say staff has worked with us diligently. On a Metro Access standpoint with the service area and other projects and getting input from us. But of course, there's still one thing, and we know by next meeting, we hope to hear some traction and improvement is with the call center itself in terms of the reservations and where's my rides side. I happen to look at the statistics and I see they've gone up and down in the month of June and July. in terms of response time, meaning, you know, the time in which a customer calls in and they are able to reach reservations and or where's my ride about their trip. It was supposed to be under 2 minutes with over 90% plus, but it's been in the looks like 60s and 70 percentile. And it, of course, we're going to discuss that at the next meeting, but we're hoping from staff that during this summer break period, they've diligently worked with the call center and in terms of hopefully coming with some kind of, you know, leeway or solution and progress in this situation.
Paul, thank you. That's great. And I will point out that a similar problem is happening with the Star call center and with all the taxis in the region because people are working from home and they're not localized in a central position where people can work with them. So it is a problem, no question about it. And it's a problem in most of the call-in transportation system. I know my wife uses taxis. She has a hard time getting yellow cab to work. Star is having problems in Arlington. So we'll turn it back to Paul Smedberg, please.
Well, no, we really do appreciate this time. And you guys always have thoughtful comments at the board meetings too, which is also, you know, really helpful because it does help ground us. You know, there's so much that's thrown at us and, you know, the work you do and the comments you make at those meetings really, really do matter. So just want to say thank you for that.
Thank you. That's terrific. And as someone that's there, I can tell people are taking notes when I'm talking.
No. And look, I mean, the approach you all take, you know, you're logical, you make sense, you've done your homework. I mean, you work with staff. I mean, And it all shows. So it's really wonderful to see that, to be honest.
Yes, and we appreciate it. The people that have been around longer know it takes a little time, but it eventually works out. And we tell that to the new people. You don't snap your fingers. We are advisory. And my wife doesn't always take my advice. And so we should be used to that. Thank you so much for coming in. What would you like us to do for this year?
I'm sorry, Phil?
What would you like us to do for this year?
Look, I mean, we're entering a really, really critical stage for the organization in terms of, you know, our future and, you know, what is Metro going to be when it grows up? And I think, you know, as I said, everything is going to be on the table. So we're going to, you know, need to hear your voice. I mean, it's that simple, you know.
That's terrific. Yeah. If there's anything special, just
yeah. I mean, I'd you know, in terms of budget stuff too, I'd start thinking a little longer range, maybe, as an advice. If there are things that, you know, you all think would be, you know, a sort of a mid-term or longer-term project or initiatives, you know, because that's when the it's going to become a real challenge potentially. So,
well, that's terrific. And again, our group does represent larger groups like the blind, like Parkinson's, like MS, and mm-hmm. we are lobbied. And fortunately, our friends up on Capitol Hill are very receptive to 15,000 people asking for the same thing in their district or their state. And so we do. And so we have been lucky. FTA and DOD have had grants, and WMATA has applied for them. The new canopies you've put up, I love the one at DuPont Circle, but there's money for that.
Yeah, finally coming to completion. Yeah.
And there's money that is coming from the feds. Fortunately, we have a great advocate in the Illinois Senate delegation. Who lives in the Illinois?
and you know, Phil, I think one thing also to keep in mind for the committee is, you know, just making it very clear, again, because of some of the, you know, and then there are going to be some budget challenges. I mean, there just are. You know, making it very clear what your priorities are.
Yes.
And that's, you know, and what is fundamental to your you know, mission or your goals, you know, for the, you know, for the disability community. I mean, I think, or things we're doing now, you know, that are sacrosanct, you know, I mean, you know, just getting a good understanding of that.
No,
would
that
would probably terrific. Be really helpful.
That's terrific. Mr. Millis, who used to be our coordinator, was very clear. Everything we ask for has a cost.
Yep.
And when you ask your dad for your allowance, you've got to explain why you want that baseball bat or motorcycle or whatever. So, yes, so we will follow your advice in that area.
All right.
And be patient. We don't expect anything instantaneously.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenging time for local governments, state governments, you know, everyone, as we transition into this new work-life balance that we're all going to experience, I guess.
And we're watching the midterms very closely.
Yeah.
Because a lot of money comes from the federal government, and a lot of money comes from the jurisdictions.
Yeah. Well, I think bigger term also too, I think this country in general has got to start thinking about, you know, what, how they view transit. You know, they don't view transit the same way they view utilities, you know, and I think it's sort of similar. And so the whole view of transit has got to change. And you know, you see maybe a little bit of that happening now, or people maybe thinking about it differently, but I think,
well, even the rural
areas, yeah, the whole view of it has got to change. Yeah,
even rural areas in Virginia, VRE is offering transportation this month. Because
the new train service there is every month, it's like going up and up. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, because people that couldn't afford to live in the urban area had moved out of town, so their kids have a backyard, and now they can take VRE to get into town. It is an awakening for the rural people as well as the urban people. City folks grew up with subways and buses, and the suburbanites are used to the Long Island Railroad and the area, but it's become more important to them to get back into town for stuff.
Yeah.
So that's neat. But
all right.
Enjoy listening to Teresa.
Well, I may listen in. Every time I hear from Teresa, we learn a lot. So
yes.
Not to put you on the spot, Teresa.
Well, she's another Oxfordian, and she remembers what transportation was in Oxford when she was a student.
That I do.
There she is.
Yes, they always told me that stripe in the middle of the road was for the bicycles.
Good evening, everybody. Actually, it was fairly apropos for me to get to listen to the chairman's update and some of the discussion. It actually ticks off a couple of the blocks that I had in my update for the committee. Just in case there are any new members whom I haven't had the pleasure of meeting, I'm Teresa Pistato, Metro's Chief Safety Officer. I joined the agency in late 2019. So right as soon as I kind of got my bearings, the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and we've been working to adjust. And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank this committee for all of your guidance and input as we work to navigate the pandemic. First item that I wanted to provide a quick update on was the serious accident that occurred Saturday with a Metro Access vehicle. We are fully investigating this accident, working with the Metro Access contractor, National Express, taking a look at the involved vehicle as well as the behavior of the vehicle operator. At this point, we don't have anything to indicate that there was any type of a mechanical failure or an issue with the vehicle. And we're working with the vendor and the operator of the vehicle, pairing that with our fact finding to determine probable cause and see if there's anything that we can learn from this to communicate throughout our Metro Access operations. So very unfortunate incident, but something that we were able to rapidly respond to. And I'll be able to provide further update based upon the completion of our investigation, which should be done by the end of the week this week. Additionally, I did want to alert the committee that we received conditional approval for the next revision of Metro's agency safety plan. from the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission. We received that today. Unlike many transit agencies' agency safety plan, Metro's agency safety plan governs the entirety of our operations. It's not specific to just our rail operation like it is in most transit agencies. It's multimodal and lays out targets and objectives for all modes of transportation. The agency safety plan will be presented to the Board Safety and Operations Committee this Thursday at our meeting and will be voted upon by the full board later in the month of September. We release that agency safety plan publicly and track performance to those targets. Additionally, just wanted to give a quick update on the Orange Line station openings. I was out there earlier today at all of the stations. They look great. Thus far, we're buttoning up just kind of a couple last punch list items, but they are overwhelmingly accessible. And there was on time and on budget work that was performed with the stations. I did want to provide a pretty significant update relative to COVID-19. I wanted to provide an update as to where we are today, where we're headed tomorrow, as well as answer some of the questions that I heard posed earlier. So there is still a public health emergency as declared by Health and Human Services that runs through October. So we are still employing COVID mitigations as a result of that declared public health emergency. That includes not having any members of the public join our exercises as volunteers. So this year's practical exercises and drills did not include anyone other than a first responder on scene participating in the exercises. Beginning next year, we will be returning to our full four full-scale exercises per year. And we do look forward to re-engaging with the committee and our jurisdictional partners to plan for and conduct these exercises. Definitely heard about the concerns and issues with the waiver, and we'll take that back to Metro's legal team and get some additional updates on the path forward with that. We are planning a coordination tabletop exercise with our Northern Virginia partners, specifically Loudoun County, for pre-revenue planning for the Silver Line operations. And we'll be reaching out to the AAC for your involvement in this tabletop exercise that should be in the coming weeks that we'll be reaching out. We really look forward to having you serve as exercise planning team members, as well as players in both the tabletop and full-scale exercises as we return to them. Also, I wanted to provide an update relative to Metro's cleaning processes for COVID-19. We are maintaining our compliance with the CDC's guidance for cleaning and disinfection protocols. So all high-touch surfaces are cleaned and disinfected on a daily basis with a disinfectant that is currently on the EPA's list N, shown to kill coronavirus. That's in our stations, it's on our fleets, as well as any publicly accessible areas. We've also implemented ventilation improvements throughout our systems. Currently, all of our stations and facilities have been upgraded to MERV 13 filtration. We are working further to pilot and deploy MERV 15 filtration throughout all of our facilities. Our rail vehicles have been upgraded to MERV 12 or 13, depending upon the series of the equipment. We are also piloting UVC systems in our rail cars. On our bus fleet, we've upgraded to MERV 10 filtration systems and have been working with the OEMs to pilot UVC. We've been working with area public health academic institutions to evaluate the efficacy of the UVC systems. Currently, we're in data collection for the pilot process. We have the enhanced filtration alone, plus enhanced filtration with UVC and UVC alone. And we've been collecting data as well as performing simulations and mock-ups throughout our bus and rail fleet to determine the optimal combination of systems. Currently, we're about 50% through the data collection process. And what we found thus far is that the significant benefit appears to come from the enhanced filtration with very minimal marginal benefit coming from the UVC. But we do have about 50% worth of data to continue to collect. So we're going to take a look at that and not make any conclusions prematurely, but did just want to provide an update on our efforts with ventilation. We are also looking to pivot and learn lessons from the COVID-19 pandemic. The specifications for new buses, the specifications for new rail cars, all of those are currently being reviewed to identify any additional requirements relative to filtration, air exchanging, potential compartmentalization of trains or buses, and opportunities to enhance fresh air intake. All of that is currently being reviewed relative to the lessons learned. We're also looking at surfaces and potential use of antimicrobial surfaces or surface applications long-term. All of this will inform our efforts moving forward in a post-pandemic world to ensure that we are adequately prepared and resilient in the event of another pandemic. One ask that I have of the committee, we will be reaching out to solicit input relative to everyone's experience in the pandemic. What worked for members of the committee? Did you get the information that you needed from Metro in a timely manner? Were Metro's public-facing communications sufficient and adequate? What types of barriers did you experience to getting information? And any type of insight, suggestions, or guidance that you may have to inform the next revision of our pandemic response plan, we would greatly appreciate. My team and the Office of Emergency Preparedness is currently soliciting input, and they'll be reaching out in the near future to query the committee and gather your thoughts and input so that we can learn from them. Unfortunately, I was hoping that I would have had a lot more time before I had to tell you about a potential other public health issue, which is the recent increase in monkeypox infections in the region. So monkeypox has been declared a public health emergency, and Metro has taken the time to evaluate our current processes, and we've spoken with NIH and CDC to ensure that all of our activities are in accordance with the latest guidance around managing monkeypox infection in the region. I'm pleased to report that we've reviewed all of our cleaning and disinfection supplies and processes, and they are shown not only to be effective at killing coronavirus, but also to be effective at killing the emergent virus that causes monkeypox. So we don't need to change any of our supplies or any of our cleaning and disinfection practices. At this point, monkeypox is primarily spread through skin-to-skin contact or contact with bodily fluids. So unlike COVID, it's not thought to be primarily an airborne transmission vector, but that is something that we are actively monitoring with CDC as well as with the public health authorities in the area. We've communicated to our workforce things to look out for. And in the event that we receive any type of notification that there's been an individual presenting with monkeypox symptoms or any type of a report where there's a suspected presence on the system, we will be using the same processes that we used with COVID-19 to quarantine the vehicle and have it effectively cleaned and disinfected, or to quarantine the area within our stations and ensure that it's appropriately cleaned and disinfected. Again, slightly different protocols than the ones that we saw with COVID-19, much less likely to have that high rate of transmission, but is something that we are actively monitoring. And lastly, I did want to provide just a quick update on the good news with the return of more 7000 series trains to the system. We received approval Friday of last week to operate up to 20 7,000 series trains throughout the system. So we're working to ramp up our inspection protocols and get those trains out and about on the system to further improve our ability to provide additional service throughout the region. We're working continuously with the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission to ensure that we're metering the ramp up and are adequately prepared to continue to return to our ability to provide significantly improved service throughout the region. So definitely more to come there, but good news that I wanted to share with the committee. That completes my pre-planned update, but I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Super, let's think. And we'll let Paul go for his 3 minutes and then Tino his three. One point on the monkeypox, because it is fluid, masks are going to be important so that when somebody sneezes, it's into their own mask, not into their next door neighbor. And part of the information may be on the signs in the metro, the long sleeves. It's summer, and so suggesting long sleeves, trousers, socks, etc., just because it is a droplet contact transmission, and hand sanitizer might be useful and more informational than anything else, since we can't require anything. But just as information to the public, and I know Arlington County is setting up treatment centers for it, and they're doing very well. And working with Arlington might be a good back and forth. But I will throw that over. Paul, go ahead. You have your 3 minutes.
Oh, this will be less than a minute, if not 30 seconds. The update with that MetroAccess accident that happened 3 days ago, I would like to, even though I know the next meeting we have a guest speaker for the first hour, but during our portion of the meeting, whenever that happens, and if there's time, we can readjust some of the items on that second half of the menu. We would like to get an update on that you were talking about a week. If it's not coming from you, from one of the MetroAccess call center management staff about that, and if the, you know, for the committee members for that particular incident, and what MetroAccess is looking at in terms of its, you know, examination of policies, any next steps.
Absolutely, I'll make certain that we have a full briefing prepared.
Okay, thank you.
Terrific, Tino, you're on the clock.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Impastato, have you ever spoken with the chief safety officer of CAP Metro? His name is Gardner Tadden. Okay, and he has already installed, or at least CAP Metro has installed, the UVC germicidal filters. Now, you told us you're studying them and looking at results, but you know, this has been going on some time. I mentioned at the beginning of the pandemic that even before the pandemic, Dallas and Houston had installed them, a number of had, and now CAP Metro, Randy Clark's own outfit, installed them, and I think all their buses now have them as of June. Let's move along. I mean, everybody feels that the COVID pandemic is over. Well, it's really not. And people like me, in a few months, I'm going to be 87. So I'm at one of the high risk categories. I have to be extremely careful when I go. And so do others. People who are immunocompromised have to be very careful. So that's why I'm anxious that the buses, which I take, begin using these germicidal UVC ventilators. and in addition, I think they're eventually as cheap as the ones that are installed now. They just have to have a bulb change once a year, something of that sort. So, and in any event, as the GM told, Chairman Smedbeck told us, the capital budget is taking care of these kind of things, maintenance, et cetera. So we don't have to worry about what the federal government is going to do. The federal government gives us plenty of money, or enough money, sufficient money, out of, to handle our capital budget. So please do something about this. You know, it's really overdue. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I do communicate with Mr. Tabon. Gardner and I go way back to prior lives where we worked very closely together when he was at New Jersey Transit and I was at Amtrak. So we've spoken specifically about their procurements and about their efforts. All of our new buses, we're looking to include this as standard on those buses. Part of the evaluation process and part of why we needed to pilot this was powering and maintaining the UVC systems. We share the sense of urgency. We want to get to an answer as soon as possible and begin full-scale deployment. But we need to make sure that the system that we put in is effective and that the system that we put in can be maintained in a state of good repair without otherwise negatively impacting the buses. We do have some specific differences in our fleets versus what Cap Metro has. And that's requiring that we work with the original equipment manufacturer to make sure that we're not going to have any type of a degradation or a deleterious effect on the existing fleet. But I will definitely continue to work with the team and stress that sense of urgency, and would be happy to provide a future update to the committee on our deployment efforts.
Thank you. Phil, you're on the clock for the last comment before we let Teresa listen to the presentation on Silverline. So Phil, you're on the clock. Okay, I guess Phil has disappeared.
Oh, I'm sorry. It just like got take me. I got to turn off my mute. Yeah, I was just thinking that also was like maybe to make the system go more consistently during like because it was with maintenance side, making things so more consistently when there's like a breakdown of train or track gets broken. That way, which is there a way we could like have the each line have three tracks rather than two tracks? So like say like if a track breaks or if we have another instance like I experienced on at North Bethesda when the train broke down, they could have that wherever that side of the line travel move to the middle track rather than have the single track with the other track. So we have both the lines going at the same both directions going at the same time while they fix. While they deal with getting the broken down train off or fixing the track or whatever.
Thank you, Phil. We need to talk to the original designers. And so maybe some new extension of the system will do it. But Teresa, you have been terrific as always. I look forward to your Thursday presentation.
Thank you. I'll speak with you all very soon, and I will follow up on those items and send an offline update to the committee.
Fantastic. Thank you
very much. And I think we may be ready for Neil Knott. Neil?
Good evening. Thank you for inviting me to give a brief presentation on the Silver Line. I will try to make up a little time for you so you can get back to your agenda. Anu, could you bring up the presentation, please? So I've just for reference, I've been with Metro for 21 years, and the entirety of that time I've worked on the Silver Line, starting with the early environmental stage of the project, through design and construction of phase one, and now very close to wrapping up phase two and moving on to a different project. So it's been a long haul, but very, very rewarding. And I think we've had the project before the accessibility advisory committee a time or two in the past. But so next slide, please. So just, and I have to get something out of my screen here. So just quickly, the stations that are part of the Silver Line Phase 2 are the Reston Town Center Station, which is the first station outbound of the Wheelie Reston Station, which is the current terminus of the Silver Line, followed by the Herndon Station, the Innovation Center Station, the Washington Dulles International Airport Station, the Loudoun Gateway Station, and the new end of line station will be the Ashburn Station that is in Loudoun County, as is obviously the Loudoun Gateway Station. As part of the project, we also have designed and constructed a large service and inspection yard where we will store rail cars and maintain rail cars and also house other departments and activities that occur at many of our yards. The yard is 90 acres and has a capacity to hold 168 rail cars, and there's also parking for 470 employees and visitors. Next slide, please.
Yes, and Randy, for our low vision people and our call-in people, Neil has just said everything that was on that slide. You didn't miss anything by not seeing it. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And I will try to continue to be descriptive of all the content on the slide. So the current slide is bullets for the Reston Town Center Station and an aerial photograph, a satellite photograph that shows an overview of the Reston Station, which is in the median of the Dulles Access Highway, which in turn is flanked by the Dulles Toll Road. So the station is in the median between the two highways, and there are pedestrian bridges that span over the lanes of the highways and terminate in what we call entrance pavilions. And those entrance pavilions.
Idle is reactions.
Don't know what that is. Entrance pavilions have vertical circulation to get up to the pedestrian bridge level. And that circulation includes escalators and elevators, two elevators and a stair. So there's redundant elevators and redundant escalators at each entry pavilion. And at this station, there's an entrance pavilion, both what we call the north side of the station, which is the side that is most adjacent to the Reston Town Center. And on the south side, there's also an entrance pavilion. And at both sides of the station, there are bus bays, as well as kiss and ride bays. So on this slide, some of the issues repeat for all of the what we call at-grade stations, which is all of the stations other than the Dulles Airport Station. So the pedestrian bridges, we've limited the slope or the gradient to no more than 4%. I think most of you know that the cutoff for when the gradient becomes a ramp is 5%, but we've set that target at 4% to try to limit the efforts to cross the pedestrian bridges. The elevators, escalators, and stairs at the entry pavilions, as I mentioned, that's a repeating theme for all the entrance pavilions except for one, and we'll get to. And at the Reston station, the bus bays, the kiss and ride area, and the bicycle facilities, really all the site facilities are to be owned and maintained by Fairfax County. The entry pavilion and then a rectangle, if you will, about 5 feet from the face of the pavilion are owned and operated by WMATA, but the rest of the site facilities are owned and maintained by Fairfax County. I mentioned the Reston Town Center, which is located north of the station. The heart of Reston Town Center is a little bit less than a half a mile. The Fairfax County will be running buses from the north entrance to Reston Town Center, as will the business community will be running shuttles. So there'll be access from the station to the heart of Reston Town Center. The station proper in the median has, like all of our at-grade stations, there's a mezzanine and a platform level. And we have elevators, two elevators again, stairs and escalators that connect between the mezzanine and platform. And again, that repeats for all the at-grade stations. For those of you who may have visited or are familiar with the Wheely-Reston station, the phase two stations are essentially clones of that station in terms of the architectural design and the facilities at the stations. Again, the one exception is the Dulles Airport station. And I've spent a little more on this slide because has elements that repeat, and we'll go more quickly through the other stations. So next slide, please. The Herndon station, again, is outbound of the Reston station. It's also located in the median. The Herndon station also connects directly to the Fairfax County Park and Ride facility at Herndon, which was fairly recently expanded with the opening of a second garage. So the pedestrian bridges from the Herndon Metro station connect north and south again. And the south pedestrian bridge also continues past the entry pavilion and connects directly into one of the two parking structures. At this site, there's also a significant number of bus bays, and there's kiss and ride facilities and all the park and ride facilities. So this is a very busy station, will be a high patronage station. This must be my cue to move more quickly. So if we could go maybe back one more. Okay, so thank you. And so in the patronage projections for the Silver Line, the Herndon station will become one of the higher or the highest patronage, taking that mantle from the current highest patronage, which is the Wheely-Reston station. Next slide, please. The Innovation Center Station has same facilities as the other at-grade stations. It connects to an additional Fairfax County parking structure on the south side. And on the north side, it connects to park and ride facility. I'm sorry, not park and ride, kiss and ride facilities and bus bays, which also occur on the south side. And a unique feature of the north pedestrian bridge and entry, because of the length of this bridge and the touchdown location and the geography, topography at that touchdown, there isn't a need for vertical circulation. The bridge basically touches down at grade level. So there's no vertical circulation at the north entrance pavilion or entrance of the Innovation Center Station. Next slide, please. Okay, the Washington Dulles International Airport Station, which takes up a lot of room on our signs, is what we call an aerial station, which means the trains and the platform are above grade. And so in order to clear roadways and obstacles at the airport, the tracks are above. They're basically as if it was a bridge structure. And the mezzanine level is down at the level of the walkback tunnel at the airport. So there's an existing tunnel that connects from the north parking structure to the terminal building. And we've connected the mezzanine of the new metro station to that walkback tunnel. And that tunnel includes moving sidewalks for those who are able to use them, that decreases some of the travel time to get to the terminal from the station mezzanine. It's about a 5-minute ride/walk if one stands on those moving sidewalks along the way to get to the terminal floor, the ticketing floor. This station, because the mezzanine level was set by the tunnel elevation and the platform elevation is set by minimum clearances over roadways at the airport, there's about a 54-foot elevation difference between the mezzanine and the platform. Because of that, and because of the fact that we envision there'll be a number of people who have luggage, that are traveling with luggage and boarding the metro system with luggage, we've incorporated 4 traction elevators at this station. So these traction elevators, an electric traction motor, and they achieve much higher travel speeds than the typical hydraulic elevators we have in most of our stations and parking structures. We hope to move people quickly and efficiently with 4 elevators at this station. In addition, there are escalators. There's a very long continuous run, 2 escalators and stair at this station as well. The fare gate array incorporates 2 accessible fare gates instead of the normal 1. This is to accommodate, again, folks with with luggage that often use the accessible gates and to maintain capacity for those who need to use the accessible gates. Next slide, please. The next station, again, outbound, heading outbound, is the Loudoun Gateway Station. This is the only station that has a pedestrian bridge going only to one side of the station. And at this station, it connects at the north side of the station to a Loudoun County-owned and operated parking garage. At grade bus and kiss and ride facilities. And again, the at grade facilities of bus, kiss and ride, and bicycle facilities are owned and maintained by Loudoun County. And Metro's property interest is just the immediate area around the entry pavilion. You can see that there's a lot of intertwining highways and cul-de-sacs and clover leaves. So that's why this station has a bridge only going in one direction, because the other side is not immediately developable. And the last slide, or last station, I'm sorry, this is the Ashburn Station, which it will be the end of line station. There's significant development planned at both sides of this station. This station is in the median of the Greenway, and there are parking garages that Loudoun County has developed and will own and maintain. And there are also significant number of bus bays on both sides, north and south, as well as kiss and ride facilities. Just a mention for Loudoun County and Fairfax County, you will be able to use your Metro's Smart Trip card in those parking structures. The end of line station, beyond the end of line station, is a tail track area. But basically, this is the end of the line for the foreseeable future in Loudoun County. And next slide. So just some images of what the stations look like from the platform and on the left side at the airport access. So the typical at-grade station has the vaulted roof, much like, or just like the Wheelie station, and the typical palette of colors and materials for the platform and platform edge and tactile tile. And the airport station, Washington Dulles National Airport Station, has a screen wall. It's a large glazed or glass wall that will provide weather protection, wind protection for folks on the platform, but also is intended to relate to, but not literally mimic the international terminal, which is literally across a large surface parking bowl at the Dulles Airport Station. Next slide, please. And these are, again, photos of a typical pedestrian bridge on the left. and typical interior of one of the at-grade stations, and the interior of the vault, showing the skylights and parapets that are reflective of the existing WMATA system, the underground system, the vaulted roof, but translated to be an open and more modern station. And that's the end of my prepared presentation, and open up to any questions folks have.
Okay, thank you. And we'll have our hands go up and put you on the clock. I see Tino's hand up. I have one quick question.
Sure.
Lodges will accept WMATA fare media. What about the shuttle buses and the Loudoun County buses? Will they accept the WMATA fare media?
So I'm not sure about the shuttles provided by the business. I believe those will be likely be free, but the Loudoun County buses, I believe the there, and I don't know specifically the answer. I will check and get back to Carol with that answer, unless Carol might know off the top of her head. But I'm fairly sure we'll be able to use the smart trip on the all the, I know it works on Fairfax, I imagine on Loudoun, but I'll need to verify that and get back to you.
Neil, I am not sure whether we have that that information either. So if you could get it, I would love to have it. That's a great question, Phil.
Yep. Super. I'm embarrassed I don't know the answer. But
how do you get from Ashburn Station to the Commander's Field for football?
Ever the optimist that it will be out there, right? I'm not sure where the latest scheme. I thought they were talking about the quarry site, which is actually closer to the innovation station, but we'll see.
Okay, super. Tino, you're on the clock.
Neil, in terms of yards, the station at Dulles is quite a distance from the airport itself. How easily and quickly can people with walkers or elbow crutches or wheelchairs get from the stations that you've been describing to the airport? And the second question is, now that there is a Silver Line train that goes out there, will that mean that the metro buses will be discontinued? I've taken them, and they did go into the city. They're slower, obviously, than a metro train would be. But are you going to discontinue the buses?
So I think decisions about the bus routes are still in front of us. I'm not entirely sure. There are a limited number of buses that go out there, but I always, you know, used to take the bus from Roslyn to Dulles, which was a great route. But we'll see what comes out of the final decisions on the bus routes. So getting from the station to the terminal building, I don't have numbers for various modes, like someone in a wheelchair versus someone, you know, with a walker. The closest I can get, and I can work with Carol and see if we can estimate like a walking speed for different modes, but walking from the terminal to the station or vice versa, it's a 5-minute walk if you ride on the moving sidewalks. obviously, depending, some people walk on the moving sidewalks and it would be a shorter trip. But that's a frame of reference. I know it doesn't directly answer your question, but we can look at, you know, what those numbers would be for different situations.
I'd like to add, Tino, that there's a shuttle that goes from the entrance to the station to the actual airport, that might be used by people who have a lot of luggage, people who don't want to walk that distance because they don't have the endurance, or maybe it's just too far for them. So there's also that option, that, and that particular shuttle's always been there because that it moves people from the parking garage to the state, to the airport.
Yeah, thank you, Carol. I was going to mention that, and I don't know how difficult it would be to call up that slide, but so the shuttle is on the north side of the station, which is opposite from the terminal, and you would access it from the mezzanine north. Not very far to the north is a bank of elevators that are actually part of the parking structure, and then you can get up to grade. So on the right, so if those of you that can see this image on the right, you can sort of see the parking structure, and you can see the tunnel. So if you went from the mezzanine where you can see the station manager's booth, if you travel to the north or to the right, you get to a bank of elevators that can bring you up to street level. And then that's where you can board a bus, a shuttle that goes to the terminal.
Thank you. That's terrific. Just to move along, and again, to let everybody on the committee, Metro Access should be servicing Dulles Airport when this all opens. And that's what most of us will probably use to get out there. We're running a little short on time, so let's go to Thomas. You're on for 2 minutes. Thomas Mangrum.
Yes. When it came to the buses, the talk about canceling the buses maybe going to the airport, I don't think that should be canceled because you got got some stops in between going to the airport or what have you that people use the bus route for. They don't just use it to just go to the airport. So I think that should still be kept, but you might want to think about maybe having less buses, maybe, I don't know. But canceling out the buses altogether, I don't think that's the best thing to do. And also the picture that you shown at the station, it don't seem to be any guardrail or anything like that to keep people from jumping off the end when the train goes to the end of the station. It seemed to just be open out there. So have y'all thought about that at all? Thank you.
Hey, so comments on the bus routes noted. I think in that image that you're reacting to, it's actually a section cut, and there is railings and gates at the ends of the platform, just like any other station.
Thank you. Steve, you're on the clock.
Okay, very quick. In looking at the station itself at Dulles that you put up as a slide, I only saw one set of seats. And this is in my opinion, a bit of deficiency that we have in a number of stations. But in particular, people are coming in all hours of the night, tired, and with a lot of luggage. And sometimes the trains will not be as frequent in those hours. From the picture, I saw only one. And we really need to accommodate the fact that this is an international airport and really needs some seating. Also, I noticed that the actual covering from the picture doesn't seem to cover the entire train. And, you know, our area is an area with some pretty heavy precipitation, and people are coming with things that may not permit them to hold umbrellas and what have you. So if there's still an opportunity before finalization of that, you might want to consider the kind of weather that we have here and handle that. I better stop now because we're really tight for time. But yeah, that's the most important thing that I think you should consider.
Okay, so just quickly, there are actually 5 windscreen enclosures with benches at that station. We increased the number for that station for many of the reasons you mentioned. The canopy, the roof, is not over the entire 800 or really 600 foot train. That's fairly typical of metro stations. And unfortunately is driven much by cost, just the cost of extending that roof for the full length of the train. And most of our riders figure out how to be in the right place in the train. So when they get out, they're undercover. But and that station, although that was a photo simulation that I used in the slide, the station is completely built at this point. So we don't really have an opportunity to extend the roof at this point, at least not as under this project.
Neil, thank you. We have 15 minutes left for the meeting, so I'm going to thank you and Teresa and Paul for all the time you spent with us. And I'd like to get to public comment. And then for Pat and for Nessa, I apologize, but if we have time, we'll let you guys go with public comment. So Anu, do we have any public comments?
Dr. Posner, Steve is the only one who had put his name for the list for public comments. We have no other public comments today.
Okay, that's terrific. So
okay, I'll keep it very laser and brief, I promise.
Go ahead, 1 minute.
Okay. Okay. These were safety issues, but we were kind of running out of time. I notice on the buses right now, about half the time or even 40% of the time, masks are available. And the other half the time, they're not. And I wonder if it's a stocking situation, if the operators handle this, are we just out of stock? Because I do see a pretty definitely over 50% continued compliance with masks, but there may be people who board and don't have them. So just to bring that to somebody's attention that about half the time where I'm not seeing masks as I used to.
Thank you, Steve. We will check with Teresa on Thursday when she does her presentation. And the new GM does not wear a mask, but he's okay.
The other thing, I just want to make one sentence and then during the bus rail subcommittee, we can continue. I've noticed that on some of the buses, they're beginning to put, you know, the priority seats sign on the first line of buses that face forward. The problem is they're putting them at eye level of the people who are sitting there. So a person who is sitting there, be it a senior or person with disability or anybody else, can't look out the window. And I consider that to be a bit of a safety issue. So before more of these are put on the buses, consider perhaps either moving them higher or doing what should be done. But right now, if you're of normal height, if you're sitting there, you can't look out the window. And just wanted to bring that up. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Steve. That is really important for those of us with vision to get where we are. So thank you so much. I think what we can do is move on and let's skip the roll call because I think everyone knows who's here. And Anu, I think you have the attendance from people who have signed in. Approval of prior minutes and board report once again. Since we haven't met in August, we can put those off for a little bit so we can have a little bit of time to let Vanessa, who has been very patient, have her 2 minutes.
Alert, audio now unmuted.
Well, yes, thank you. I do want to ask the question regarding beginning part of your presentation. You mentioned 470 parking spaces, employees, and I guess others. Do you know the ratio to employees and what's left over for public parking? Is that just for that one station or is that spread throughout the system?
No, yeah, I'm sorry. So my reference there was specifically to the yard, to the Dulles yard, and it's remote from most other facilities. We wouldn't have public parking, but there are, visitor spaces and the appropriate ratio of accessible spaces within the yard for our employees, but it's primarily employee parking for those who
alert. Kelly Simino has joined.
Work at the yard.
Alert.
Okay. And then my other question, because the other one that I asked was going to be about the shuttle also, and that was already answered. And I wanted to know, are most of these stations underground or are there any underground station stops?
Who is that just spoke, please?
This is Vanessa.
Okay, thank you, Vanessa.
Mm-hmm.
Either phase of the Silver Line project, we don't have underground stations.
Okay.
Thank you. And Pat,
real quick, I got pulled away from alert. Part of the meeting, so maybe this was covered. I'm being interrupted here. What is the length now of the subway system going to be? How far away is Asbury from West Falls Church, the last station?
So we branch off between East Falls and West Falls Church mm-hmm. stations. The entirety of the extension, the Silver Line beyond that point is about 24 miles.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And just from a ride perspective from the Dulles Airport to say Metro Center is approximately, I think, 55 or 56 minutes is the travel.
Very good. Thank you for that. Yeah. Okay.
So really, what Reston to Ballston is about a half hour. So from Ashburn to Ballston would be an hour.
I'm not sure the exact numbers, but I think a little less than an hour to Ballston from Ashburn.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Super. Thank you. And before we get back on our agenda, are there any other questions? Seeing none, Neil, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes.
Thank you, Neil.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Now, if we get to approval of the minutes, since we haven't met since August, everybody's had a chance to read them. So without objection, I will consider the minutes accepted. Are there any objections? Well, if Phil is not objecting, then nobody would object. So the minutes are accepted. The board report, once again, is a draft. And you have had a chance to look at it. And the final board report will reflect what went on tonight, what goes on Monday, what goes on the following Monday during Metro Access, and also what goes on Thursday at the safety meeting. So that's my report on the board report. And if there are any suggestions for the current draft, please email them either to Anu or me, and then we can adjust it and present it to everybody at our next meeting. So I think we do have time for Metro Access and Bus Rail Subcommittee reports. Let's be different. Let Metro Access go first this month. Paul, wake up.
I'll wake as I put my hand down.
2.5 minutes.
Okay. Well, I'm only going to do it maybe. I'll try to keep it less than 90 seconds. We'll see. Okay. So from our meeting from July, we had lots to talk about. We talked about the GPS system. It's expected to come within the next few weeks. At some point in the fall, it won't be at the next meeting because it's been chopped because the GM is coming in to speak. Probably in October, we'll talk about the update from that. The higher concern updates are about the Metro Access call center. We will get an update about that. And also about this accident that happened over Labor Day weekend. We would like to get the briefing on that, whatever information is at the next Metro Access meeting. I am sending a modified agenda, which does not touch the first hour. I just moved some things around in the second hour, which I'll be sharing before this meeting ends. We got an update on shared rides. And the Metro Access service update that the service area is largely unchanged. And we will talk about in the future how the expansion is going to look like with the Silver Line opening in Virginia with the service area at a future date, probably October. And the other last big piece is Metro Access fares. As you know, 70% of customers are now paying, as of July's data, a flat fare of $4. So that is wonderful. And we hope we will continue with that. And that is, we had customer service, customer guide suggestions, which they took into account, and we went over our work plan. So that is about it from me, and I'm sending off this modified agenda, which does not touch the first hour of the meeting, which is being used for the GM. And that is my report.
Well, thank you so much. And Tino, I will ask you to put your report off until Monday, since you are meeting with Bus Rail. And we have covered an awful lot of material today. I will remind everybody that it's going to be a big meeting on Monday. And Randy Clark, the new CEO, general manager, is going to be there on Monday. And so be prepared with additional questions. And once again, the safety committee meeting on Thursday will be broadcast over the website and also on YouTube, anyone wants to keep up. Let me compliment the committee. You all behaved very well, listening to everybody else's comments and reports, and asking good questions in slow, loud voices for our translators. So I really want to thank everybody. You're obviously well-rested after August. So thank you all very much, and have a really safe trip home. And hopefully I'll see you Monday at Bus Rail with Tino. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye, have a great week.
Just
a reminder.
Thank you, Phil.
Go ahead, Anu.
Just a reminder, we are holding, excuse me, just one second.